100.3 WNOX is proud to present The Veteran Next Door. Here's your host, Randall Baxter.
Welcome to The Veteran Next Door, and I'm your host, Randy Baxter. Today, our guest is Miss Beverly Sherrod. She's an employee at Blount Memorial Hospital in Maryville, Tennessee, and I'm going to let her tell you a little bit about that.
I work in senior services, which is a part of the Emotional Health and Recovery Department. Mm-hmm. We provide services to any adult who takes care of another adult.
Respite care?
No. More consultation, which is closely in line with counseling, but we don't charge for our services at all, so we cannot call it counseling. We call it consultations, and we sit down with the caregivers and listen to their story and try to come up with a strategy of some way to help them. They a lot of times need respite care for their loved ones, mm-hmm. so we know where that respite care is available and how to get in touch with them, how to access it, and any kind of service related to caregiving for an adult.
Miss Sherrod is here to tell us a story today about her uncle Fred Chatfield, who's from a little town up on the Kentucky-Tennessee border. This is a Korean War story in 1950. So before we get started, we have to have a map. You have to understand a map of Korea. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to make a fist and hold your thumb up. Now I want you to turn your thumb upside down, and I want you to bend your thumb. Where you're bending your thumb right there, that's the 38th parallel of Korea. But if you go up and wiggle your thumb, where your thumb joins your hand, that is the Manchurian border between Korea and China. And if you're looking at your thumbnail and you take your little finger on your other hand and put your little finger on the lower right-hand corner of your fingernail, that is Busan in Korea. Now, go up to Manchuria and drop down about an eighth of an inch, and right there is a little river called the Chonggon River. And that's going to be heavily involved in our topic today. So hold on to your map. You're going to need it in a few minutes.
Can you tell me a little bit about who Fred was before he went into the Army?
Well, he was the only son of Fred and Minnie Chatfield. In Pleasant View, Kentucky. Grew up there in that area. I don't know if they always lived in the place that I knew them to live, but went to Pleasant View High School, which is still a high school there. Other than that, I don't know a lot about him.
You mentioned earlier that he didn't like school.
My mother did tell me that he joined the service when he was 17. He lied to get in about his age, and she felt like he joined the service because he didn't want to go on to school, and he didn't really want to work on the farm. My grandfather had a farm, plus had to work a full-time job, and working on the farm was hard work, and I think my uncle just felt like he could help my grandfather more by going into the service and sending home his money. Now, I do have several letters that belong to my mother that my Uncle Fred wrote, and I've read all those letters, and he would send his check to my mother, and she would put it in an account for him, and he would tell her to give my grandparents money out of that check to help them. And of course, she was also helping him save money for when he came home because he wanted to buy a car. Mm-hmm. And some of those letters even ask about me as a baby, and want to know, you know, little things about me.
So when did he join in, like 49 or 50 or?
Probably 49.
Mm-hmm. So he had no idea that there was a war about to start.
No, I don't think so.
Fred Chatfield, Sergeant, D Battery, 82nd Anti-Aircraft Artillery, Automatic Weapons Battalion, 2nd Infantry Division. Age, about 19. Wound up in one of the hardest fighting divisions of the Korean War, and he was promoted to Sergeant the month before he was captured. Chinese didn't like the 2nd Division. They had been nose to nose with him for the most of the early part of the war. It was July 23, 1950 when the 2nd Division arrived in Korea. Fred Chatfield was just in the crowd. By August 24, 1950, his whole unit had been committed to battle. And by August 31st, the North Koreans had attacked, forcing everyone to fight, clerks and everybody, even the band members. Now get your map out and look, because the 2nd Infantry Division was the first to break out of Pusan in the lower right-hand corner of your map. They led the 8th Army to within 50 miles of Manchuria, all across Korea, up to almost the Chinese border. Added to the 2nd Infantry were elements of the South Korean Army and a Turkish division. They were assigned to guard the right and the rear of the 8th Army. Initially, they were on the front. But when the Chinese attacked and the 8th retreated without changing positions, they were no longer on the front. They were the rear. Early in the Korean War, when the North Koreans first attacked, they surprised us, but they were pretty easy to deal with, and we pushed them back. And by the time the United Nations, mostly American forces, were pushing up toward the Manchurian border, they had become lackadaisical. They weren't wearing their helmets, and they were joking about being home by Christmas. The Chinese weren't that well armed. Every fourth man had a rifle, and everybody else had grenades. What does all that have to do with Fred Chatfield and a 19-year-old boy from Kentucky a few miles north of Knoxville, Tennessee? Well, that's our story today. And you're listening to The Veteran Next Door, and I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and we'll be right back.
The Veteran Next Door will return in a moment here on 100.3 WNOX.
Sun up on a cool, sweet morning. Sausage frying in the pan. Make that sausage always Wamplers. It's the finest in the land. Wamplers, Wamplers, it's great sausage made on the farm in Tennessee. Don't say sausage, just say Wamplers for the best in quality. Make that sausage always Wamplers. It's the best in quality.
Historic Springs Bottling Company has set up an alkaline water distribution center at the Veteran Next Door store at 4812 Asheville Highway. This is natural spring water with no chemicals added, ionized, alkaline, pH 9+, delicious, clean, and smooth. It's an effective antioxidant, reduces acid waste, increases alkalinity, and hydrates cells quickly. It's ideal for athletes. Health News International reports that acidic tap water can contribute to type 1 diabetes. The newspaper also reported that drinking alkaline water can neutralize acidity. It is also reported to counteract over-acidity when you have a cold or a flu. This can help reduce the risk of heart disease, strokes, immune dysfunctions, and many common ailments. So visit the Veteran Next Door gift shop and get a week's supply and change the acid levels in your digestive system. Keep a gallon in the fridge this week and see if it makes a difference. The Veteran Next Door store is open Saturday from 10 until 3. Call 865-525-2323. Located one block west of East Minister Presbyterian Church. The Veteran Next Door gift store.
Hello, I'm Randy Baxter, your host of the Veteran Next Door. I'm not a veteran, but many of my clients are. They seem to have the same issues regarding their estate plans. From the time you turn 60 to the day you turn 85, just like all my clients, you'll experience health changes, relationship changes, and asset changes that will affect you for the rest of your life. I call this a change in your true purpose for money. At age 65, with retirement ahead, thoughts of having enough income for the rest of your life take priority. But what happens if the market crashes, or your spouse dies, or becomes so ill it affects your monthly budget? Are you using your veterans' benefits appropriately? Would you qualify for Medicaid planning? Are all your legal documents up to date? Do you really understand the annuity you purchased or the risk in the stocks and mutual funds that you own? Do you have someone who represents you and your estate plan and heirs and not some company in New York or an agent who must sell you products his company tells him or her to sell? Before becoming my client, you must first participate in a free, no-obligation review of your current plans, your current estate plan documents, and your current health status. Then we need to discuss how your health status affects your true purpose for money. We will also discuss how your health and relationship status can best be served by your current plan. Then we will review your liquid and non-liquid assets, discussing any special needs of you, your spouse, or any other dependent. And what happens next? Nothing. The interview is over. We discuss if you feel a need to have another interview a few days later, or we set the appointment for a second interview on a later date. Nothing is purchased or sold in this interview, and you make the decision if there needs to be another interview. This interview can occur in my office or in your home. The lives of my clients evolve and change. It's important to build trust and to maintain a long-term relationship with any family or financial advisor. Take the first step and call 525-2323. That's 865-525-2323. And schedule an appointment. There's no fee to have this review and no obligation. My name is Randy Baxter, and I'm the host of The Veteran Next Door. And I'd like to have you as a client. Now let's get back to the show.
On October 25th, 1950, the silent fears of the United Nations were confirmed. The Chinese that had been quietly amassing between the UN forces and the Yalu River suddenly made their presence known. In the central mountains, thousands of American troops were ambushed and surrounded by a massive Chinese division. Entire battalions were caught off guard and decimated. Airdrops were all the support the UN soldiers had. They fought desperately in all directions, trying to make it out alive. Most of them didn't. As word of the massacre spread among the troops, their morale, which had been sky high just hours before, dropped quickly.
They said it sounded like Chinese. No one knew what the hell was going on. It was Halloween and colder than a witch. We waited and froze. It was very dark. Robert Harper, 19th Infantry.
The Far East Command, already gearing up for a victory parade, still couldn't believe it was facing a full Chinese assault. Reports back to Washington claimed the attacks came from a small force assisting with the defense of the Yalu River, and nothing more. But General Walker was alarmed. He ordered all of his units, even those far from the attack, to pull back to the Changchun River and reevaluate the situation. Then, just as abruptly as the ambushes came, they ended. The Chinese faded back into the hills and waited. Throughout November, American surveillance planes tried to determine just how many Chinese were out there. Estimates counted between 50 and 70,000, a manageable number. But it turned out they missed another 250,000. The Chinese were incredibly adept at concealing themselves. They would keep still all day, camouflaged under helmets covered with brush. To planes flying overhead, heavily occupied areas often looked like empty landscape. Most of November passed quietly, and UN troops held out hope that they'd make it home for Christmas. Assured by the silence, General MacArthur ordered a cautious advance on November 24th. In the west, the 8th Army would head for the Yalu as a unified front, hoping to prevent any single battalion from being caught out on a limb. In the east, the 10th Corps was ordered to make a major advance around the Chosun Reservoir. The first day of the offensive was encouraging. Modest gains were made all along the line. But then, on November 25th, the war suddenly turned upside down. The Chinese found a vulnerable gap between the 8th Army and the 10th Corps in the Central Mountains. They struck there with all their might. The entire UN line was split in two. 3 days into a renewed offensive, the UN force found itself in a full-scale retreat. The UN's lines, as well as its spirits, were broken. And with the attack came the North Korean winter, an enemy that would prove every bit as merciless as the communists.
Now, let's get back to your map. Find the Manchurian border. That's at the top. That's where your thumb hits your hand. And right there where your thumb hits your hand is the Yalu River. The Yalu River is the border between Korea and China. The 8th Army was in the west, heading toward the Yalu, across the Chonggong River. They were assisted by South Korean troops and Turkish division. And this is what the South Korean troops heard. The South Koreans were in a panic. They knew the Chinese were coming. When the Chinese Communist Force attack began on the night of the 25th, November 1950, Fred Chatfield's anti-aircraft battalion was scattered in support of the 2nd Division elements and the South Koreans. Since American air power controlled the skies, there was no need for anti-aircraft fire, so the battalion's weapons were used. The 450 caliber machine guns mounted atop their semi-tracked armor truck and the M-19s called Twin 140s for the rapid fire 40-millimeter guns were used to bring tremendous amounts of firepower in direct support of the infantry. All during the nights of the 25th and 26th of November, the Chinese attacked and overwhelmed isolated Allied forces arrayed along a 60-mile front. Some formations were driven back by the Chinese attacks, but overall, the 2nd Infantry Division held their line. This was especially true of units from the anti-aircraft battalions. That battalion, inside it, was Fred Chatfield. Even so, the Chinese Communist attacks were unrelenting until finally, on the night of the 27th of November, a massive drive pushed the 2nd Infantry Division south of the Chonggong River. During this final phase of the battle, batteries of the 82nd anti-aircraft artillery literally moved and fought until overrun by superior enemy forces. Many of the battalion's gunners and support personnel then left the roadway and continued to fight on as infantry, filtering out of the immediate safety of Sun Chan, farther south where elements of the 2nd Infantry Division regathered. Sergeant Chatfield was captured. Sergeant Fred Chatfield had been a sergeant about a month, 19 years old, from up on the Kentucky-Tennessee border, didn't want to go to college, didn't want to be a farmer, so he joined the Army. We'll talk about what happened to him after that in a few minutes. You're listening to The Veteran Next Door. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and we'll be right back.
The Veteran Next Door will return in a moment here on 100.3 WNOX.
Hello, Tennessee fans. This is Rick Terry with Rick Terry Jewelry Designs. And you know, I'm the official place for those wonderful fire opals, that Tennessee jewelry that you've never seen anywhere else. And I want to be your jeweler. And now, with two locations to serve you, Kingston Pike and Campbell Station Road, where we've been forever, and our second location in Lenoir City on Highway 321, Lenoir Mills Center. We're in the shopping center with the Brown Cup. Serving East Tennessee for over 22 years, I'm Rick Terry, and I want to be your jeweler.
Hello, I'm Randy Baxter, your host of The Veteran Next Door. In real life, I'm an estate planner. You've heard about what happens in my first interview as an estate planner. Now I want to share with you a few things that have happened in second interviews with my clients. Mrs. C had retired with the state of Tennessee and was on a tight budget. She had a life policy costing her $125 per month. We were able to stop her monthly premiums and guarantee her death benefit to age 120. Mr. L had an annuity he did not understand. And after reviewing the term of his contract, he decided to make changes that decreased the surrender period and guaranteed his income for life. We could not have accomplished this in the first interview because I needed time to do the necessary research and he needed time to think through the first interview and to find a reason to have a second interview. The money Miss K, a widow, had in the bank earning almost nothing and being saved for her children was better served in a tax-deferred contract. I call this eliminating FUD, F-U-D, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. There was no high pressure, only a discussion of the present plans as they existed and a determination of whether or not the current plan satisfied the client's true purpose for money. I have learned that when given the chance to review the positive and negative aspect of any investment or any estate arrangement, my clients will be able to make the decisions that are best for them. That is why I insist on a first interview where nothing is bought or sold and a second interview if the client would like one. You can call me to schedule that first interview at 865-525-2323. That's 865-525-2323. Or if you have email, contact me at randallbaxter@randallbaxter.com. That's one word, RANDALLBAXTER @randallbaxter.com. Thanks for listening. Now let's get back to the show. Welcome back to The Veteran Next Door. I'm your host, Randy Baxter. The Chinese had pushed the 2nd Infantry Division and way back, and if you look at your map, they were up along the Yalu River on near the Manchurian border, and they had been pushed across the Zhongong River, and now they were heading back toward, and if you look at your map, the part where you bend your thumb, they were heading back toward the 38th parallel. And the 2nd Division had been ordered to be the rear guard. That means that while everybody else was getting out of Dodge, the 2nd Infantry Division, along with Sergeant Chatfield, had to fight and slow down the opposing Chinese army. On November 30th, the 9th Infantry Regiment led the withdrawal by attacking roadblocks that the Chinese had set up. They used 4 tanks to go down the road, and the Chinese held their fire. Encouraged by this development, the officer ordered his infantry regiment to press forward. But Chinese machine gun and mortar fire immediately stopped the advance at 9 a.m. The South Korean, or ROK, 3rd Infantry Regiment, attached to the 2nd Infantry Division, was sent to reinforce the 9th Infantry Regiment, but it was routed by friendly fire. With no contacts between the American commands and the British units, the Middlesex Regiment advanced to the south end of the valley without attacking the roadblock. Believing that the roadblock was short and the British were attacking up the road, the American officers ordered the 2nd Infantry Division to run through the blockade at 10 a.m. As the 2nd Infantry Division entered the valley, later known as the Gauntlet, the Chinese machine guns delivered punishing fire while mortar rounds saturated the road. The length of the roadblock caught the 2nd Infantry Division by surprise, and the road was soon filled with wrecked vehicles and wounded and dead soldiers. Those who tried to take cover in the ditches were promptly left behind by the convoy rushing south, and unit cohesion instantly evaporated. During the day, the air cover tried to suppress the Chinese positions with some success, but with no air cover at night, the Chinese attack intensified. Finally, the Chinese blocked the road completely by destroying the U.S. 38th and 503rd Artillery Battalion of the 2nd Infantry Division. And the immobilized artillery pieces forced the rest of the division to abandon all vehicles and to retreat by hiking through the hills. If you remember, Sergeant Chatfield was in the artillery division. At the rear of the division, an American officer attempted to save his infantry regiment by retreating through Kunuri, Korea. In one of the last acts of the battle, the 23rd Infantry Regiment fired off its stock of 3,206 artillery shells within 20 minutes. And the massive barrage shocked the Chinese troops from following the regiment. The last stragglers from the U.S. 2nd Infantry Division finally arrived at Suncheon, Korea on December 1. And by December 2nd, the 8th Army had completely lost contact with the Chinese. Sergeant Fred Chatfield was captured on December 1. Did I mention it was 20 below outside? When the United Nations soldiers were captured during the Battle of the Chongchong River, the Chinese troops would march them north toward the Yalu River. Sometimes they would let some of the prisoners go so that they would roam around and American troops would try and save them, and they would use them as a trap to either capture or kill more soldiers. But they put them on a death march, and there were 5 camps up near the Yalu River. And the worst of these camps was called Camp Number 5. It's never really been documented whether the Chinese just did not have the supplies or the logistics to get food to those camps, or whether it was an intentional act to starve those soldiers to death. But there are some documents called Chinese and Silent Murder that are concerning the Korean War and the prisoner of war camps. I want Miss Sherrod to explain to you a little bit about how a family feels when a soldier goes missing in war.
In some of those eyewitness accounts that I have seen in my files, it states that he had lost a lot of weight and that he died of either starvation or dysentery, or both.
Yeah, and that there were 7,160 POWs in Korea, and 47% of them died in captivity, which is the highest death in captivity, except for the Germans dying in Russia and the Russians dying in Germany. And even it's even higher than the Americans who died under the Japanese prison camps. What I learned was that I couldn't figure out why they would hate them. Except they either hated all Americans or they especially hated the 2nd Infantry Division. But they either didn't have the resources to feed them, or they intentionally were starving them to death. Well, let's go on. Tell me some more about things. Tell me about your family's reaction. I know you said they were crying and upset, which is understandable. But you have an unusual interest in your uncle. It's something I don't see in a lot of people. I have an uncle who fought in World War II, and most of my cousins don't care. Mm-hmm. But they know they had Uncle Frank, but they don't know that he was in Okinawa. But that your Uncle Fred was in Korea. But what sparked your interest? What pushed you to do the research that you've done?
Well, like I said, I was 3 years old. I remember staying at my grandparents' house that summer with my two boy cousins, while my parents took my grandparents to Frankfort, Kentucky, to try to find out more about what happened to Uncle Fred and meet up with a soldier who had known, either had known him or known about what happened to him. And my aunt stayed there with us in Kentucky and took care of us. We were ages 3, 2, and 1. But I was old enough to remember the sadness and didn't understand what was going on, just knew there had been some changes in the level of happiness there and my grandmother was never the same after that.
Maybe Fred Chatfield's mother never needed to know what happened to her son. I've got some emails and letters here that were written by people who were prisoners in Camp 5 in Korea during the Korean War. My uncle was captured on the 26th of November, 1950, in the Battle of the Chongcheong. I had been told that he went to Death Valley on a death march and was marched to a camp called Camp 5. My mother told me that when Uncle Jack came home, that he talked about being captured while in a foxhole. He appeared to have been tortured. He could barely walk, and his mental state was extremely different. My family suspected that he was exposed to torture interrogators, broken bones, and maybe truth serum or the like. Things were so bad for him that upon his return, he had to soon thereafter be admitted to the VA Psych Hospital in Maryland, where he died in 1959. Another letter says, from a paratrooper who had been captured on his last jump, that his jaw was broken by his captors, and it weren't for his fellow comrades who fed him and made him eat, he would have starved to death. One letter speaks of a soldier who, even though he was injured and hungry, it's rumored that he said that he stood up in defiance of his Korean captors and started to sing our national anthem during roll call at Camp 5. Here's one person who just says, I'm looking for people who may have been held with my uncle. He was a sergeant who was captured and later died while held as a POW. Or maybe he ran into people like Dick Whalen. Today, the 80-year-old Rotterdam town historian and Korean War veteran blends a bit of humor with his recollections of Camp 5. There's the prison camp, he said, removing a small photo from a collection of cards tucked in his wallet. If it was in Lake George, it would be a hit, but the area was one of the most notorious wartime prisoner camps where Whalen remained for all but 5 months of the conflict. He was a cook in the army then. He was captured by the Chinese inside the Unsan territory of North Korea and arrived at Camp 5 at a time when prisoners were dying at a rate of nearly a dozen per day. Whalen, when he returned to the United States, spent more than a year undergoing treatments for advanced tuberculosis. Prior to his capture, Harry Brown's unit came under heavy fire from the droves of Chinese soldiers pouring into the country from the north. He was among a group of about 24 survivors from his unit captured and brutally marched more than 30 miles across the frozen mountainous region to Camp 5 3 months later. At the camp, he used his knowledge of books to entertain the clusters of starved and sickly soldiers huddled in cramped, mud-thatched huts amid sub-zero temperatures. Camp 5, though the camp wasn't heavily guarded, it was racked with starvation and disease, which killed roughly 1,500 of the nearly 4,500 captives held there. The conditions had become deplorable. Soldiers were crammed shoulder to shoulder in the huts, which served as breeding grounds for lice. The lice would be sapping our blood right out of our bodies. The Chinese offered a paltry diet of millet and sorghum to their captives, many of whom slowly wasted away. Those who didn't fall to the brutal winter cold found themselves contending with pneumonia and dysentery. Person said that he was looking for information that anyone may have on the above mentioned soldier who died while captured on the Chongjong River. So families all over America are wondering what happened to their sons and their husbands and their children. Many of them were buried on a hill beside the camp near the Yalu River. Sergeant Chatfield was mortally ill. He reached Camp 5 and died among his companions in late April or May of 1951 of exhaustion and probably pneumonia or dysentery. He was buried on rising ground behind the peninsula camp. The Army, not having an exact date, later set May 14th for record purposes of 1951. Americans have not yet been allowed to work at Camp 5. But we have recovered some POW remains from villages further south. Sometimes it's best that the mothers don't know. You're listening to The Veteran Next Door. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and we'll be right back.
Veteran Next Door will return in a moment here on 100.3 WNOX.
Historic Springs Bottling Company has set up an alkaline water distribution center at the Veteran Next Door store at 4812 Asheville Highway. This is natural spring water with no chemicals added, ionized, alkaline, pH 9+, delicious, clean, and smooth. It's an effective antioxidant, reduces acid waste, increases alkalinity, and hydrates cells quickly. It's ideal for athletes. Health News International reports that acidic tap water can contribute to type 1 diabetes. The newspaper also reported that drinking alkaline water can neutralize acidity. It is also reported to counteract over-acidity when you have a cold or a flu. This can help reduce the risk of heart disease, strokes, immune dysfunctions, and many common ailments. So visit the Veteran Next Door gift shop and get a week's supply and change the acid levels in your digestive system. Keep a gallon in the fridge this week and see if it makes a difference. The Veteran Next Door store is open Saturday from 10 until 3. Call 865-525-2323. Located one block west of East Minister Presbyterian Church. The Veteran Next Door gift store.
Sun up on a cool, sweet morning. Sausage frying in the pan. Make that sausage always Wamplers. It's the finest in the land. Wamplers, Wamplers, it's great sausage made on the farm in Tennessee. Don't say sausage, just say Wamplers for the best in quality. Make that sausage always Wamplers. It's the best in quality.
Randy Baxter, the host of The Veteran Next Door, is available to speak to your civic group, organization, your church, your school, or any group interested in the American veteran and what non-veterans can do to support them. Topics will include great stories from the Army, Marines, Air Force, and Navy, personal stories about our veterans, and ways to interview your personal veteran while you still can. Now, if you're looking for a dynamic speaker and a heartwarming desire to preserve our heritage and the heritage of all veterans, contact Randy Baxter to schedule your group's event. Call 865-525-2323 or contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com or visit theveterannextdoor.com, our website, to get more information. Put Randy Baxter on your calendar today. Randy Baxter, the host of The Veteran Next Door, now available for your speaking engagement.
Now back to The Veteran Next Door on 100.3 WNOX.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Veteran Next Door, and I'm your host, Randy Baxter. It's time to get our maps back out. So go ahead and get your map out. Make your thumb point down, and remember that Fred Chatfield was one of the first Americans to arrive in Pusan in the bottom right-hand corner of your map, and he got there not long after the North Koreans had gone into their initial attack and pushed the United Nations back into the corner in Pusan. The 2nd Infantry Division was the first infantry division to break out of Pusan and go up across the 38th parallel and straight north almost all the way up to within a few miles of the Manchurian border. Now, they didn't just let him walk up there. They had to fight the whole way. When the Chinese attacked on October 24th and again on November 25th, they pushed Fred Chatfield and the 2nd Infantry Division, along with the whole 8th Army, back across the Chungon River, south, all the way back down to the 38th parallel. And along the way, that on December 1st, that's when Fred Chatfield was captured. And then they marched him back on a death march, back up north, across the Chungon River, all the way up to the Manchurian border near the Yalu River into Camp 5, which was also a notorious death camp. And that's where he died. And that's where he is buried with his dog tags in his mouth. And that's where he could be returned if the North Korean government would allow it. But there's no cooperation between the governments, and Fred Chatfield rests in peace on the Yalu River in North Korea. What about the aftermath of the battle? U.S. 8th Army's casualty numbers exceeded 11,000 in the first count. A large number of documents, including all records from the U.S. 2nd Infantry Division and the U.S. 24th Infantry Regiment, were lost during the battle. This made it difficult for historians to either analyze the events in detail or to assess the exact battle damages. However, it was later approximated that the U.S. 2nd Infantry Division had suffered 4,037 casualties, and most of its artillery pieces, 40% of its signal equipment, 45% of its crew-served weapons, and 30% of its vehicles were lost during the battle. A lot of it when they had to run the gauntlet. Thus, the U.S. 2nd Infantry Division was deemed to be crippled. Its officer, commanding officer, was relieved of command by the end of the battle. The other U.S. unit that had reported significant losses was the U.S. 25th Infantry Division with 1,313 casualties. The Turkish brigade that had helped the 2nd Infantry Division had also reported 936 casualties and lost 90% of their equipment, 90% of their vehicles, and 50% of their artillery. And the brigade was rendered combat ineffective. The South Korean casualties could not be estimated due to the complete absence of South Korean records during the first half of the Korean War. As for the Chinese losses, it's estimated they had 45,000 casualties by the end of the battle, and the official Chinese history attributed 20,000 casualties to combat, while the rest were attributed to the lack of adequate winter clothing and the lack of food. With the U.S. and 2nd Infantry Division, the Turkish Brigade, and the Republic of Korea's 2nd Corps out of action, the U.S. 8th Army was reduced to just 2 corps, composed of 4 divisions and 2 brigades. Meanwhile, the overextended Chinese logistics system had also left the victorious 13th Army half-starved and incapable of any further offensive operations. But during the chaotic UN retreats, no reconnaissance was conducted to determine the state of the Chinese forces. As the result, Walker ordered the 8th Army to abandon North Korea on December 3rd, much to the surprise of the Chinese commanders. The battle that we've been talking about today attributes to the definition of the borders of North Korea being the 38th parallel. There were no borders there until that battle, but the Chinese and the North Korean had established the fact that they controlled all of Korea above the 38th parallel. All hopes for a unified Korea were abandoned, and a ceasefire at the 38th parallel was proposed to China on December 11, 1950. They refused. The Americans restocked, retrained, and using the 8th Army and the 2nd Infantry Division as the United Nations main force. They gave the Chinese Army a severe defeat in the Chinese offensive of 1951. It was too late to get Fred Chatfield home. You're listening to The Veteran Next Door. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and we'll see you next week.
I never was a soldier, but I played one as a child. History was good to me. I grew up free and wild.
You've been listening to Randall Baxter and the Veteran Next Door. Be sure to join us again next Sunday morning at 9 here on 100.3 WNOX.
If you'd like a copy of today's show, contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com or call 865-525-2323. A copy of the show is only $6 plus sales tax and freight, or you can pick them up at the Veteran Next Door store at 4812 Asheville Highway. Copies can be purchased as individual shows, multiple copies of the same show, or as a series. What better way to share time with the kids than by listening to the experiences of people who actually lived through historic events, like the Battle of the Bulge, World War I, Knoxville during the Civil War, Vietnam, as told by soldiers who were there, the Cuban Missile Crisis, Afghanistan, and Islam in the 20th century. Each show is hosted by the Veteran Next Door host, Randy Baxter, describing the history-making events and introducing you to people who experienced the event firsthand. Purchase the shows one at a time or in sets by topic or mix and match to suit your learning needs. The complete World War II series of 9 shows is only $27 plus tax and freight. For a list of available shows, call 865-525-2323 or contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com.